On Wednesday, August 5th, Trent University's Department of Environment and Life Sciences welcomed visitors to its second annual Farm Research Center open house. In August of 2025, the university unveiled the new light body drive shed, the first of the new facilities at the site, constructed with funds from Trent's Momentous campaign. This year, they invited donors, local farmers, and members of the media to talk to students and faculty about the new agricultural research initiatives that the farm is taking part in, and to see the yield of the new facilities for themselves.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for being here for our second annual open house for the Trent Farm Research Center. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Karen Thompson, and I'm an associate prof in the Trent School of Environment and the director of the Trent Farm Research Center, and it's a pleasure to welcome you all here.
Hi everyone, I'm Ashley Garland and I'm the new Farm Operations Coordinator at TFRC.
Awesome. So this morning we are here to gather to kind of learn and celebrate the increasing research capacity we're building here at the farm and to give our Trent community members and our larger Peterborough community members the opportunity to come out and see what our wonderful students have been working on and hopefully find potential other ways that we can work together on collaborative research that's relevant to our local agri-food sector.
Agriculture is important to everyone. Everyone eats and needs access to healthy, nutritious food. As a graduate of the first class of Sustainable Agriculture and Food Systems, the program here at Trent, and coming from a farming family, I'm excited to have joined the TFRC team this year, and I'm excited to share with you the work of our students and what they're doing to advance agricultural sustainability in the region. Agriculture is a pillar of the economy, supporting more than 800,000 jobs in the province, so the opportunities we provide to Trent students are incredibly important in giving them the experiences needed to enter agri-food employment. I'm also really excited about some of the plans Karen and I have for the coming years, including starting our own TFRC-based farmer-led research program, where local farmers can work with students to answer their production-based research questions here at the farm.
Later, I caught up with the speakers from that clip, Karen Thompson, director of the Trent Farm Research Center and associate director of the School of the Environment, and Ashley Garland, farm operations coordinator at the Trent Farm Research Center, for a media scrum with assistant professor in the Trent School of the Environment and sustainable agriculture and food systems program coordinator, Kira Borden, to talk about what the farm has been doing in the year since they last welcomed the public.
So last year you unveiled this new light body drive shed, and now this is the second open house that the research farm is done. Can you walk me through a little bit about what you've been doing in that year?
Oh, yeah. So I think most importantly, we got Ashley in as our new farm operations coordinator, which was a really important step. So we got a great person in the role now. We have been kind of building capacity, so just kind of trying to find different ways to find a little bit of funding to support student stipends and different community partners to work with us. We have some pretty fun, pretty fun plans for the next year or two?
Yeah, I think there's a few of the guests here today, some OMAF and OSCIA as well, some collaborative projects that we hope to be doing with them. I think one is slated for 2027, so spring, and just working on establishing forage recommendations for the area. So that one will be exciting.
Yeah, so that's part of the Ontario Soil Management Subcommittee that is run through the provincial government, and they're trying to reestablish new fertility guidelines for different forages. So they haven't been done since like the 70s. And obviously the climate's changed, the soils have changed. So yeah, we're excited about that. We also have a new seed restoration orchard that we're starting in collaboration with Kawartha Land Trust. So that's an exciting project. And then we're also starting our farmer-led research program here at Trent. So we're hoping we have at least three or four farmers who have expressed interest just today in working with us. So the idea will be that we run the research projects here at the farm where we have students actually doing the work. And we're trying to answer some questions that our local farmers might not have the capacity to do on their own. So we're pretty excited about that too.
How many students are you currently employing and what kinds of things are they doing around the farm?
Okay, so we have 5 undergraduates and 1 graduate student that are like employed where they get paid to help work on the farm. And then the actual different projects, there's a whole bunch of other undergraduate and graduate students. I don't know the numbers off the top of my head. that are doing their like undergraduate thesis work, internships, their master's or PhD work out here at the field. So I don't know off the top of my head, but lots.
Yes.
And we're hoping to expand too, that it's not just as much the environmental science and agriculture focused students, but also the ones like in Indigenous studies and education, that we get more students out from different departments that could hopefully make use of the farm facility as well.
What departments are you guys currently working with, and how has that collaboration been?
Currently we have, so Trent School of Environment, biology, chemistry, Indigenous studies, and then we also, like, this didn't just all happen just from us. There's kind of all these different departments that have been involved, so like philanthropy, animal care, facilities management, so they've all really contributed in different ways.
We also have, well, Ann Pasek on one of our projects from cultural studies, so they, that group goes out and does interviews with farmers as part of our projects around looking at soil carbon sequestration and computer science, or computer science department. I'm not sure the exact name of the department. And so using data that we generate here, that we quantify here, looking to see if they can use that in any sort of machine learning process to analyze data in different ways.
Yeah. And I also forgot, sorry, we also have a collaborator from forensics who's been working with us to develop new kind of sensors and different ways to measure changes in carbon and nitrogen in the soil from a forensics perspective, so that's always interesting too. So yeah, I think there's still a lot of opportunity to get more people involved out here, but we're kind of expanding each year.
Of course, the best part of the open house was the opportunity to talk with so many of the farm's undergraduate and graduate researchers and to see for myself exactly what they were working on. First, I spoke to Kaylee Wright and Ruby Wetzel, who were demoing an EOSense automated soil flux chamber, which they used to measure nitrogen concentrations in the soil of a patch of corn.
So our project here is a fertilizer trial in partnership with V6 Agronomy. We are testing two novel fertilizers and comparing them to two conventional controls. Throughout this corn field, we have 12 soil collars set up, which we bring our environmental chamber and set it up on each collar in turn. In use, the collar closes and creates a sealed environment, which then circulates through our portable greenhouse gas analyzer, which is used to measure our nitrogen fluxes into the atmosphere, including ammonium and nitrous oxide. Not ammonium, ammonia.
Wow.
idiot. She said ammonium. Yeah, in the process, sorry.
Here, I can jump in.
Yeah, you go. Your turn.
So we are targeting different nitrogen losses through the gaseous pathway with this machine. So effectively, once we create that sealed environment, we're measuring the ammonia and nitrous oxide leaving the soil. And this is particularly important because in conventionally fertilized systems, especially when we're not looking at different best management practices, we can see increased losses of that nitrogen to the atmosphere through conventional urea fertilization. So what we're doing is comparing the nitrogen losses from the urea fertilizer, as well as urea that is treated with a commonly used chemical inhibitor. And we're comparing these losses with novel fertilizers developed with V6 Agronomy.
What happens to the corn after you're done?
People are very interested in this. People have asked Kaylee this multiple times.
Yeah, I think every single time.
So what happens to the corn? Right now, I don't think anything much happens to the corn. So we're gonna collect, at the end of the season, we're gonna collect some tissues and like see what the nutrient status is like in the kernel and everything, which also tells a story about how well the fertilizers are doing at actually enriching the corn and growing it properly. I think in previous years, it's just been plowed under to act as like organic matter additions. But nothing we're applying is like dangerous. They're fertilizers to be used in food production, so we're probably going to take a couple cobs home.
Mm.
Standing in the cornfield, another part of the farm caught my eye. A pen in which research assistant Bronwyn Little was tending to a small flock of chickens.
So why are the chickens here at the research farm?
We want to kind of simulate a rotational grazing system.
Okay.
Yeah, so we can see if it's possible to do it on like a bigger scale. I'm hoping that we do, because I love animals. But so far it's been a grazing system and then also selling eggs at Farmgate.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you would, with a rotational grazing system, you would move these chickens around the field
every 2 to 3 weeks, yeah.
2 to 3 weeks?
Yeah, 2 to 3 weeks as we move them in here. So it's a lot, like, very much shorter, short time rotational grazing. If we did do bigger, I imagine that would go up from, like, once or twice, like, every 2 months. Just to, like, really make sure it's in there. But, yeah, since we only have 7 right now, is they don't need to be moved as often.
Right, and the hope with that is, what, that they're, like, eating weeds and fertilizing the ground, kind of?
Bugs, whatever plants they want. They've so far been really good at not, like, being so heavy on pellets, which is awesome. Because they're very much like scavengers.
Sure.
And we've mostly been, if we do give them greens, we give them greens that we've grown ourselves, so we know like exactly what we're giving them. So far it's been a lot of bok choy, which they absolutely love. And then once in a blue moon is because we have a lot of plants in the nightshade family, and so we have a lot of hornworms. And so once in a blue moon, we give them one of the hornworms as like a treat.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
If you just wanted to say also your name and your program, because I'm recording for radio, so.
Yeah, no worries. I'm Bronwyn Little. I'm in the Sustainable Agriculture and Food Systems program, and I've been working here for 3 years.
Oh, wow, amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Bronwyn.
After spending some time with the chickens, it was time to lace up my boots and leave for a demo of the farm's experimental tile drainage system, which was being used to control the water and nitrogen levels in a field of soy. Max, one of the research assistants to project supervisor Dr. Catherine Imers, walked us through how the system works.
This field here has a tile drain system installed underneath it. It's basically a large porous underground system of pipes. They pull in extra moisture from the field. That lets us get larger yields from our crops. Also lets you plant in areas where you normally might not if they were too wet or flooded most of the time. The Trent Farm has a specific interesting kind of tile system. So we've got these pipes that come out of the ground here. Those let us sample directly from individual areas of the field. So between this pipe and this pipe, we can plant a unique kind of crop trial here. So we could do a different cover crop here than we can do over there. And that basically lets us compare the different effects of these crops. So we could have oats here, winter wheat there, and we can see, does one have more nitrogen than the other or less nitrogen than the other? So that's the point of these things you're seeing stuck up here. We've also got a logger right there. That lets us know soil moisture, temperature. It's useful for figuring out the different conditions on the field. One thing we've noticed is that moisture tends to be greater between the stickups and lower on the stickups because they're pulling in the extra moisture. So we're going to walk down to the very corner over there, and that's where all this water is feeding to. It's just flowing from pipe to pipe to pipe all the way down to the end, and then we can take our composite sample that represents this entire field. So we'll just keep walking down there.
Lastly, I hiked over to the far field to see the farm's adjoining weather monitoring station, which in addition to providing local weather data for Environment Canada, also records site-specific soil and meteorological data that is indispensable to the farm. Station demonstrator Craig Murray walked us through the basics.
So my name is Craig Murray, C-R-A-I-G-M-U-R-R-A-Y. And I'm a demonstrator technician with the School of the Environment, and I help look after Trent's portion of the climate station.
So what can you tell us about the climate station?
So the climate station has been on this site since 2023. Prior to that, we were just south of the university by the chip truck, the cabin chip truck. That site was established in the 1980s, and just prior to that, it was south of that intersection in the nature areas there. And so Trent established a climate station in 1968, and it was established by the biology department. And then in the fall of 1968, the geography department was established, and they took over running the climate station then. So back in those days, everything was measured manually. So students and staff and faculty would be out at the climate station taking their measurements at 9 a.m. and at 5 p.m., 365 days a year. All of those measurements were recorded by hand, and at the end of the month, they would mail them off to Environment Canada, and they'd become part of the Environment Canada record. In the 1990s, things started to automate way more. So everything was collected from computers, which meant instead of having just a measurement at 5 p.m. and 9 a.m., like with those measurements, you could tell how much rain fell overnight, but you couldn't tell that there was a huge rainstorm that lasted for 15 minutes at, you know, 12:30. All you would get was the total volume of rainfall that fell overnight. And with the automation, it allowed us to get a little more information about in terms of when the events happened, how intense they were. So all of the data from the Environment Canada site here is available on the Environment Canada website. So there's two climate stations in Peterborough. One is at the airport and the other is here. They call this, I think it's called Peterborough Trent U Farm. So you can download this data. It updates every 10 minutes, so it's almost real time.
Why did Trent want to get involved in a weather station or a climate station?
Good question. So, I mean, it's used a lot in environmental research. Initially, as we didn't have the Environment Canada stuff on site, we do collect some data that's not collected by Environment Canada, like on this tower here. You can see the arm that's pointing to the south there. That's measuring incoming solar radiation. So Environment Canada does not measure that. We also have buried in the ground in front of that solar panel, we have an instrument that's measuring soil moisture content. So that's an instrument. It's a technology called time domain reflectometry, and it's measuring soil moisture content at 5 centimeters, 10, 15, 25, 50, 75, and 1 meter. So we get soil moisture with that. We are also measuring soil temperature at those same depths. So that's data that's not available through Environment Canada, and it's data that's pretty relevant to farm research. So it's a good marriage to bring our climate station to this site.
And is there an added benefit of having like a weather station next to or as part of the farm complex?
Absolutely. So climate variables are extremely variable from site to site. Like you've experienced it, you know, it could be raining really, really hard in Lakefield and we're not getting anything. So having it as close to your research as possible is definitely beneficial. And a lot of researchers that were doing the type of research that's happening on the farm would have in other locations set up a little temporary climate station to do all these measurements. And because this is here, we have that permanent record, so they don't have to do that.
Though only in its second year as an official agricultural research center, both students and faculty in Trent's Department of the Environment continue to contribute to the expansion of research projects undertaken with the help of the new facilities. This has been Evan Robbins reporting for Trent Radio through the Local Journalism Initiative from the Trent University Farm Research Center in Peterborough, Ontario.